It's time to talk about Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. And now, here's Ira.
From Victorville to Paris is not exactly Route 66, but it is the route my guest has successfully traveled. He's one of the world's most celebrated bartenders. Scotty Shooter of Paris's legendary Dirty Dick Tiki Bar is bringing his globally acclaimed cocktails to Petite Bohème for a one-night-only takeover this Thursday, October 2nd. Known for his inventive drinks, bold flavors, and irreverent style, Shooter will transform the bar into a playground of tropical escapism. Dirty Dick has earned global acclaim as one of the most influential modern tiki bars, redefining the genre with inventive drinks, vibrant energy, and a cult following of cocktail enthusiasts. Shooter's takeover brings the artistry of Parisian cocktails directly to Las Vegas, and the collaboration is rooted in a personal history between Shooter and Petite Bohème's bar manager, Jonah Gibbs. No reservation needed, but spots are first come, first served. For more information, go to petitebohème-lv.com. And you can follow them on Instagram and Facebook. And Scotty, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay, first, most important question, because our audience wants to know, how do you define a tiki bar, tiki culture? Where did that come from? Where are you in that galaxy? And how are you coming up with these drinks?
That's a great question, actually. As you were just stating, I come from Southern California. I grew up in the desert. And actually, tiki comes from Hollywood. In 1934, a gentleman called Don the Beachcomber, he was a world traveler, a rum runner, very big history. And he moved to Hollywood and he opened up the first tiki bar called Don the Beachcomber. And he was the first one to do rum blending and adding all these exotic juices and flavors and syrups together. And it all really comes from him. And then afterward, it kind of stems from there. And then there was Trader Vic and a lot of other people. And it was very big, actually, until like the 1960s. Before that, Hawaii became a state, and every state had a tiki bar, a tiki review, where you would go have exotic drinks and watch normally a show of some kind and have dinner, like a dinner club. And it was a very, have to be very dressed up, and it was like a very nice night out. And then through the 60s and 70s, well, around the 70s, it really died out. And it became very kitsch and bad juices, bad alcohols, but still making the same drinks.
Right.
And there was a revival in the 2000s, and I kind of became part of the, call it a neo-tiki bar, I guess you could say.
I like that, neo-tiki. But how did you decide to take that route? I mentioned you were originally in Victorville, and you ended up in Paris.
Yeah, I've been in Paris 27 years, and it's actually really funny. The reason why I fell in love with tiki was actually in Las Vegas, which is kind of crazy. Right when a bar called Frankie's Tiki Room opened, my brother, I saw a tiki mug and I'm like, what is that? And he's like, well, you should go check out this brand new bar. And I stepped foot into Frankie's Tiki Room. And from obviously it's very sunny in Las Vegas, and walking into Frankie's, it's very dark. So like right away, you see the art and it's dark, and you know, the smells and the exotic drinks. And I was just hooked, like hook, line, and sinker. And I wanted to learn more about it. So I started to read up on books and the history of tiki, learning that it comes from Hollywood. And then I wanted, being a bartender already, I wanted to open my own tiki bar in Paris and be, you know, kind of the first one to do it, or bring my version of tiki to France.
Well, how did this
and now we're bringing it back to Las Vegas. So
Yeah. We're going to talk about that as well. But I'm intrigued by your history, in the sense that why did you pick Paris as opposed to some other city or some other
Well, country? That's a good question, too. I kind of, especially coming from Victorville, California, and ending up in Paris, I got stuck there, kind of. I had a family, and yeah, my son just turned 27 2 days ago, so hence the 27 years in Paris, excuse me.
Well, did you, have you thought about doing a tiki bar in the Roy Rogers Museum? Wouldn't that have been working out?
You know, that's I tell when everyone asks about Victorville, I always tell them, you know, the only thing we ever had was the Roy Rogers Museum, and they took it away.
I know.
They really, and so now we don't, well, I haven't lived there in a long time, but yeah, we don't really have much there anymore. We have an In-N-Out, which is cool, but I think that's pretty much all we got going for us.
And a bookstore. You have a bookstore there, which is also
good. And Route 66, like you said.
Yeah, exactly. So when you decided to put it all together and you decided on Paris, as opposed to, I don't know, Budapest or London or wherever it happens to be, what brought you to Paris particularly?
Well, that's where I got stuck with. I've been living in Paris for 27 years, so I'd already been bartending at that point for about 12 or 13 years.
Okay.
And it was time for me to open my own bar, and I wanted to open a tiki bar.
Now, do you speak French?
I massacre the language on a daily basis when I'm there.
As I do English.
People think that I do, but it's not really great.
When you first opened it up in Paris, did you aim it? And we will, I promise, get to discussion of your one night only situation here, but I just want to paint for our audience a picture of your background and your experience and your success. When you opened the bar in Paris, were you looking to appeal to the French per se, or expatriates in the living in Paris, or just tourists coming into Paris from all over the world? What was your demographic looking like at the time?
So even in our logo, we have a thing for the people by the people, and we really we made it as a team, and we made it for everybody. I even have would have drinks, some of them up to 19 euros, but I also have drink at 6. I have a pint of beer at 5. So, and no matter what, you know, if you want to spend money, or if you're on a budget, you can still come and enjoy Dirty Dick and still have a fun time with everybody, you know? So I kind of I made it for everybody. And I think that's why it works so well.
It is. I have a slogan change for you. And if you adopt it, I'll take a slight royalty. Instead of for the people, by the people, for the pineapple, by the pineapple.
Yeah, I like it.
All right. So if you use it, let me know. Just send me a check every so often.
We'll copyright it, yeah.
Exactly. So getting ready for this one night only, October 2nd at Petite Bohème, how did you put that together? It was obviously with your friend that I mentioned earlier, but you clearly are coming to Las Vegas every so often, but this is a special night.
Exactly. So I have a lot of family who live in Las Vegas. So I've been going to Las Vegas since I was a little kid. And I have, you know, friends in the bar industry. So Jonah was saying, like, a few years before, if you ever want to come and do a guest shift, you know, that would be great. And I'm doing another guest shift in a completely different menu on Monday. And then Tuesday, actually. And then Petite Bohème on Thursday, and they're two different menus because they're two different bars. And the menu we're doing for Petite Bohème is a tropical aperitif menu. So aperitif would be defined in France as something like you could say maybe before dinner drink or something like this. Low ABV normally, and before winter dinner drink.
Mm-hmm. I noticed that you and I are talking, and those who are now watching you on our YouTube channel are listening to the interview. So I want to describe that what you appear to be wearing is not necessarily tiki-ish. So is there, when you're actually at the bar, are you tiki-ish?
I'm always dressed in aloha shirts. I'm actually wearing a rum. This is definitely a rum shirt, a French rum, Damoiselle rum from Guadeloupe.
Very
one
nice.
Of my favorite rums. But I always in aloha, but it's afternoon here. We just had lunch, so
I get you. No fair.
I definitely should have put an aloha shirt on. I apologize for that.
Oh no, it wasn't fair of me to point it out, but I was just shocked. I thought you'd be in all kinds of tiki attire there with a pair.
Well, this guy's kind of is, you know. It's still a rum shirt.
Let's talk about some of the things you're going to be doing at Petite Bohème in terms of there's various concoctions you're putting together. I think what is Miami Vice Negroni?
This is my signature Negroni. And it happens to be Negroni week as well, which is kind of not, that wasn't supposed to happen like that. But
wait a second. How does Negroni get a week?
Well, it deserves a week. It's a great cocktail. But the Negroni week is a worldwide thing in all bars around the world.
Interesting. Okay. I mean, I could see a day. I just didn't realize it was a full week.
I would say a little marketing as well, you know?
So we got Negroni, and what does that consist of in a general way? You don't have to go through.
So a normal Negroni is always gin, Campari, and vermouth. Campari is a bitter, an Italian bitter, equal parts. And that is an Italian aperitif. They drink them a lot in Italy. And I got inspired when I was in Milan. I got to go to the Villa Campari, and I just fell in love with Campari. And I fell in love with Negronis and Garibaldis and that. And I also like the Miami Vice is actually a cocktail that is a pina colada and a strawberry daiquiri in the same glass. And it kind of goes up, so it's white and red. And normally because they're on machines like slushy machines. Mm-hmm. So I took the inspiration of those flavors and put it into the Negroni. So the gin we're using is Citadel gin. It's a French gin. And it's fat washed with coconut fat. So you have the flavor of the coconut. The Campari is infused with fresh strawberries. So strawberry Campari for the strawberry daiquiri. And then the vermouth is infused with fresh pineapple. So it brings all the flavors or the inspiration of the Miami Vice into the Negroni.
How potent are tiki drinks versus normal drinks, normal cocktails in a bar setting?
So our menu, which they do at Frankie's as well, is you have a skull or something showing 1 to 5 skulls, showing how strong the drink is. So you're knowing what you're ordering before, because at Dirty Dick, we really only use homemade ingredients and fresh juices and high-end alcohol. So everything can be very well balanced, and you're not knowing that you're drinking 4 ounces of booze. So it's good to tell the people before. But we have low ABV drinks as well. And a lot of the ones Petit Bohème, they're going to be low ABV.
For our viewers, I just want to point out, since his arm is in the frame, that Mickey is next to you, right?
So
I just want to.
Oh yeah. So Mikey, Mikey, this is Mikey.
Right. Hey, Mikey. Got him.
Mikey helped open Dirty Dick with me and did the first couple menus with me.
Ah, so he's definitely a loyalist.
Oh yeah, we're reunited out here. Every time he comes to the States, I try to come and see him. We were lucky enough to have this trip together, and I had some time off, so I'm like, let's do it.
And Mikey is opening a tiki bar in Salt Lake City at the moment.
Yeah.
Are they allow tiki bars in Salt Lake City?
We're making them allow us, baby.
That's great. I didn't realize that. Hey, Scotty, when you put together these kind of drinks and they engender a certain loyalty to that whole tiki culture, do you find that it becomes generational since you've been doing it a while? In other words, you mentioned earlier it died out a little bit a certain period of time, and then it came back up again in a refined way. But do you find that there are people that bring, let's say, older people bringing their adult kids to Dirty Dick and maybe also to here at Petit Bohème on October 2nd, that they bring them because it's a generational experience?
That's a great question. I would say because we're in Paris, it's completely different than it is the United States. Now, you have a certain type of person who goes to a tiki bar who's very, like, infatuated with tiki. They're called tiki files. And you have a lot of these types of people in the United States, and they frequent and they travel around the world to go to tiki bars. Now, and we could also say tiki culture and the tiki festivals and things like this. Now, in France, we don't have a lot of that. So we get a mixture of everybody, you know, students to models to film directors to rock and roll stars. It's everybody. So, and I think because we're in Europe too, that we, since people don't really know about tiki and where it came from, that people just come anyway, younger and older. But I think that would be different if we were in the United States, and the drinking age as well too, because there's not really, you know, it's 16 or 18 there. So
sure.
So we get a lot of everybody.
What do you think that people get from tiki culture? I'll use that in a really general term because it means different things to different people. But clearly, when they go into a tiki bar, there's a certain vibe they're getting. It's not just the drinks that are served. It's also more than that.
I would say the one word we're looking for here, which you already said earlier, was escapism. Now, tiki bars give that normally. There's normally not windows. We have one window in the front. We have a cigar room in the back. Low lights, exotic music playing, very strong cocktails. And we do non-alcoholic as well. And you just kind of, people go there to just, you forget you're in Paris, you forget about your problems, and you just enjoy the moment. And I think that's kind of what people are looking for in a tiki bar normally.
Right.
But maybe in a lot of other bars as well, but I think escapism is the word we're looking for.
Were you surprised at the reaction when you first opened Dirty Dicks in Paris? Were you surprised at the positive reception and the ongoing business?
1,000,000%. I mean, since we were blessed since the day the door unlocked, it's been very busy, very popular. We've won a few times Best Cocktail Bar in Paris. We've landed on the top 100 list a few times, and it's been very positive. People really love, I guess everybody just is looking for escapism.
They don't hold it against you that you're American, though.
No.
Or from Victorville.
Most people don't. I have to say Los Angeles because nobody knows what Victorville is.
I know it all the time. That's why I reference the Roy Rogers Museum. My one regret in life was every time I went to Victorville, I forgot to stop at the museum and say hello to Roy Rogers. And then, of course, he passed
away. They had Trigger stuffed out front.
Yeah, he did. Exactly. And then they moved the whole museum. If you had a tiki bar in there, that could still stay in Victorville.
That's a really good idea.
Yeah.
That'd be a cool theme, too.
Well, let's go back to the drinks again that you're going to be putting together, because this is so different than your typical presentation. You have one called Las Vegas 75.
Yes.
So what does that consist of?
So this is based off the French 75 cocktail. It's my favorite champagne cocktail. So it's going to be a base of, again, we're using Cité del Gin, hibiscus, kaffir lime leaf, and fresh passion syrup, a little bit of citrus, and then it's going to be topped off in, with champagne. It's a beautiful drink.
It sounds good. Do you find that you'll get people that come in? You mentioned earlier, in fact, that you have this lower alcohol content in terms of drinks as well at Dirty Dicks, and probably also when you're going to be doing the October 2nd experience. But can you also make a tiki drink for those who don't want alcohol? So in other words, like for want of a better term, when you get a Virgin Mary versus a Bloody Mary, that type of thing.
Well, most people call them mocktails now.
Mocktails.
We definitely make mocktails. So we do make everything fresh. We have about 12 different syrups, fresh pineapple juice, everything. So you can, and fresh herbs and spices. So we can make beautiful non-alcoholic cocktails. And even... you have spirits out now as well, that don't have alcohol in them, like gins and tequilas and stuff. But we make really good non-alcoholic drinks. People, you have a lot of people who don't drink, and I like to make it not boring for them. So you can have something fun and be with your friends, get a cool tiki mug, cool garnish, and still enjoy the night and not drink like soda water or a Coke or something, right? Because it gets boring after a while.
When you put you mentioned all the fresh ingredients, that not only is an additional cost for you, but there's a certain amount of time involved in preparing all of this ahead of opening the bar itself. When you look at it and you realize you could cheapen things out a little bit, but you don't. So that's a conscious decision on your part.
100%. From the beginning, we've always made everything homemade, and we're very high volume as well, and we're very garnish heavy, meaning we decorate the drinks, every single drink. They all look the same. They all try to make them all look beautiful and a nice balanced cocktail. We have one guy who preps 6 days a week, 10 hours, takes 10 hours of prep for one night service at Dirty Dick. Mm-hmm. And then the bartenders, we take another 2 hours to set up. So it's a lot of work. And I don't think a lot of people know. I mean, that's what makes, it's not rocket science, but it's like making food. If you use cheap ingredients, you're going to have a not very good meal. So using all fresh juices, fresh syrups, everything, and high quality spirits as well, it makes a beautiful cocktail.
And do you find that your reputation as a result of that, people start spreading the word that these are quality ingredients? Because there are a lot of bars, not necessarily in Paris or in Las Vegas, but just in general, there are a lot of bars that will try to kind of keep things economical, let us say. And so, you know, some casinos even, you're going to get a certain kind of a drink that may not be a premium drink or a premium cocktail.
And some people, you know, and that's fine. And that's what some people want, you know, and not everybody wants a nice cocktail. Not everybody wants to go eat in a nice restaurant. And some people just don't have a palate. So,
right.
you know, and for me, I love going to dive bars. I love it. I mean, the Double Down was the first bar ever, you know, after I graduated high school, my brother took me there and I tied one on in the Double Down. And, you know, it's one of the greatest bars in the world.
Yeah, it is funny that you're able to maintain the quality that you do and at the same time recognize that there's price levels and quality levels for everybody. So you don't necessarily have to have the best quality, because if you want the best quality, you have to pay a little bit more. And not everybody wants to pay a little bit more.
Exactly. And if, you know, in a lot of bars, you pay the same price and you're still paying a lot of money for a not very good cocktail. So and people are now, I think, in the last 10 years, really starting to look what's in the thing they're drinking or what they're eating and like, oh, I don't want that anymore. I want, if I'm paying this amount of money for something, I want something quality. Sure. I don't want to pay $15 for a drink and have, you know, pasteurized juice and, you know, a bottom shelf vodka in my drink, you know, when it's the same price and you can get something that's hand, you know, and I hate to say the word handcrafted, but, you know, everything homemade. So and paying the same price and getting something quality.
Sure. No, totally understandable. Do you find that you're contacted by people who want to get into the tiki world and open up a tiki bar anywhere in the world? Are you contacted by people saying, hey, I want to open one in this country or this city, and et cetera, because of your reputation?
I opened one in St. Bart's for somebody. Oh, I did the menu and trained the staff. I've had about four, maybe five people now who have been so inspired by coming to Dirty Dick that they have opened up their own tiki bar. No. And taking inspiration, which I did. I think that's what anyone in tiki, you kind of, you get inspired by something and then, you know, you do it. My inspiration was Don the Beachcomber, for example, and Frankie's Tiki Room.
Do you, are you going to come to Salt Lake City and help out, open up that room?
100%.
I thought
I've been up there already. We're just waiting for it to open. But that's I had the same question as you. Like, you're allowed to have tiki bars in Salt Lake City.
You can, but only from the hours of 3 p.m. to 5 p.m.
Exactly.
No, I think it's great that you're opening one there and expanding that whole awareness that a lot of people, I'm sure, that live there have no idea what tiki is. Or
yeah, I mean, tiki, it's the cool thing about it, like, it's one big family and like it's all tradition based. Everything Scotty's saying, we're going to teach our staff and hopefully they're going to go on one day teach their people. It's like that quality control, that the integrity of ingredients. It's a really rich tradition and we're just trying to keep it going. And I learned that with Scotty in Paris.
Well, there you go. There you go. That was your question.
Yeah, exactly. You're the new mentor and he's the mentee and he'll pass it on to others.
Who would have ever thought?
Yeah. Who would ever thought from Victorville to Salt Lake City indirectly?
Exactly.
So how is that when you open a tiki bar, is there a thought about food as well as drinks?
In most tiki bars, you have food. I did not put food in. Where we could have put a kitchen, I would put a smoking room in. I like to say cigar room. It sounds a lot more fancy. But it's very nice, really comfortable couches, very well aerated. So the smoke doesn't linger. Right. And there's no music. And a lot of people come for the smoking room. They'll have their drinks and they'll just sit in the smoking room the whole time and just enjoy that part of it. But that's why we didn't add food. In France, it's different than it is in the States, but it's really hard to keep a chef. And then it costs a lot of money to hire people. And I just figured, I've always worked in bars without food. So I just figured, let's do a smoking room instead of putting food in. And I'm really glad that I made that decision. But in most tiki bars.
Yeah. Generally speaking, you do have a food component that pairs with the drinks.
I would think because of the nature of the alcohol content, that would be
you'll typically find Cantonese American food. That's kind of the go-to, okay. But people are doing all sorts of stuff from Caribbean fare, tacos, whatever. If it goes well with these rum drinks, it's going to match nice.
But to soak up the booze too. I mean, in Dirty Dink, you can just eat the garnish. I think that's what you're going to have to do. Wait a minute. And I always tell people, would you eat in a restaurant called Dirty Dink? You know what I mean?
Good point. But the garnish is so alcohol infused. I don't know if that helps. Yeah. No, in that sense. So, well, we'll see what happens. Hey, before I let you go, what are some of the other drinks you're going to be offering for this one night only, October 2nd?
So we're also doing a Bourbonnais Fizz. So Pierre Ferrand is sponsoring the event. It's a cognac. They also have Planteray rum and Citadel gin. They do a lot of other things from France, from cognac. And so it's a tip of the hat to them. So we're using their cognac and we're fat washing it with butter, salted butter, adding Sauternes wine, fresh grape and honey, some citrus, and then that's going to be topped off with dry French apple cider. Mm. So kind of a fizz. It's beautiful. And then we're doing essentially a daiquiri. So a daiquiri comes from Cuba, and it's not like the daiquiris we have in the United States where they're this big, or in Las Vegas, or for example, and they're this big and they're, you know, you have two sips and you have to take insulin afterwards. So the original daiquiri is just rum, lime, and sugar, but it's very little and it's served in a coupette. So we're basically doing that, but it's going to taste like a pina colada. That's also a really good one as well.
When you put these new ones together, your own recipes, do you commit them to memory, or do you have a secret recipe book that's in a black notebook somewhere? And
I mean, that's how, you know, funny you said that, but Don the Beachcomber, this is actually Don the Beachcomber here.
Ah, I see it on the screen. Yes.
Yeah. So he was the first one to make a tiki bar. And then they went, like I said, they went crazy. There was a tiki bar in every city, everywhere. So everyone was trying to do what? They were ripping him off. They would take his staff. So what he did was coded all his cocktails. Everything was in code. So if you read it, it would be Don's Mix 2, a dash of lime juice, this and that. So you wouldn't actually know, because he would be pre-mixing everything. So you would just put a cup of this and a little cup of that together, and then there's your drink. So that's funny you said that, because that's actually how it was. And a guy called Beach Bum Berry decoded everything, because he's a cocktail historian. I do it by I get inspired. I get to travel around the world a lot, and I take it from inspirations and flavors that I get when I go around the world.
But do you remember them, or do you have to write them down?
It's all about taste and feel. Yeah, I think. No, I don't write them down normally. I mean, when we finalize them, obviously for the menu we do.
Right.
But I think it's just being inspired from traveling the world. That's where all the flavors come from.
Are you going to share that with Salt Lake City?
Well, what he's saying, I wanted to chime in, but I didn't. One of the best parts of the job on the creative side is you go somewhere. Let's take, for example, I just went to Oaxaca and I was trying some of like the local beverages. They have this yogurt cardamom drink. And I was like, yum. What the hell is that? Excuse me for cussing. And instead of like finding out exactly what it is, I took the idea home and I tried to emulate it in a cocktail. So that on our side, it brings a lot of creative joy because you get to kind of decode stuff. Sure. And with tiki, especially, these cocktails are so dense and ingredient heavy. You can go ask the bartender, hey, what's in that? They'll probably tell you. Or you say, I remember that flavor. I'm going to go home to my lab and I'm going to find out what that is and I'm going to make it. I'll try to make it better. But I remember this notion of a flavor. And I think for us, I speak for Scotty, I think that's a really fun part of the job. You go taste something crazy you've never had before. How can I bring that back to the bar?
Well, I think that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Scotty Shooter of Paris's legendary Dirty Dink, along with his friend, Mickey Mikey.
Easy, both of them.
They both sound pretty good.
And Scotty's bringing his globally acclaimed cocktails to Petite Bohème for a one-night-only takeover this Thursday, October 2nd. For more information, go to petitebohème-lv.com and follow them on Instagram and Facebook. And Scotty, before I let you go, do you have a website for Dirty Dink that people can go to?
I have an Instagram. Dirty Dink Paris is the Instagram handle.
Okay, great.
And if anyone's ever in Paris, feel free to stop by. We're open 7 days a week.
Sounds good. I'll be there. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks. See you next time.
You've been listening to Talk About Las Vegas with Ira. Each week, Ira David Sternberg talks with the celebrities, entertainers, writers, and personalities who make Las Vegas the most exciting city in the world. Yeah.